Hello, everyone. Welcome. I'm Carrie L., and this is Carrie L.'s Heartlink Show. And I am so excited about today's show, and we're going to connect to as many hearts as possible today and create as much freedom, light, and love as we possibly can. And my program will be bringing you insights into the great awakening that is underway on planet Earth as we approach 2012. And I'll be keeping you abreast of the latest tools available for anchoring a greater and healthier reality into your life. I'll be interviewing leading-edge experts in the metaphysical, scientific, paranormal, and spiritual realms. Stay tuned for the next hour as I speak with a real live soul catcher. That's Jill Kirkendall. And she is going to speak to us about soul retrieval. But for now, we're going to take a moment for announcements. And you'll also be able to call in at the bottom of the hour at 4:30 if you choose and ask questions. We'd love that. And there are 800 numbers that are available on the Internet. And I just want to mention that if you would like to be on my show as a guest sponsor for the shows, please do contact me. You can go to my website, heartlinkinstitute.com, and email me from there. Or just email me at guestsponsor@cabiz.net. That's CABIZ.net. Would love to have you on the show for a few minutes so I can interview you and promote your work. Also, I would love you to check out information on my website about what I do. I am a transformational coach, counselor, and educator. And I created the Oracle deck called the Crop Circle Cards. And you can purchase that on my website at heartlinkinstitute.com. Also, read about the up-and-coming workshop I'll be conducting July 26th and 27th. And all of you cultural creatives out there, I would love for you to join us. And it is time to take action and change and take your empowerment. We're going to be doing the workshop called Good Vibrations Blueprint. And we're going to help to increase our love and joy quotient. So please do join us. Hello?
Hello?
I'm hearing clicks going on there.
Sorry.
No problem. That was Jill. And Jill, I'm going to introduce you now. I'm very excited about interviewing you because I know you have been doing work that I also am very interested in. And that is soul retrieval.
Yes.
And Jill, you are a therapist, a physical certified physical therapist.
Correct.
And a minister as well.
Yes.
And you have your own private practice in Hawaii, working as a specialist in soul retrieval.
Yes.
And you've been working for some time in the Western medical paradigm and making a shift for that and improving upon that using your transpersonal medicine.
Absolutely. So, and I find both very helpful and supportive of the process. In fact, it was within the Western traditional world of medicine that I began to observe this phenomenon of a soulful reunion when you would think it would be, you know, maybe not the most conducive place or time. But in fact, it often occurred in a hospital setting as people were making a great effort to recover and get out of bed. So this was my first observation of a phenomenon that I later come to understand was a form of soul retrieval.
Well, it's interesting how that evolved for you. And it, apparently, you know, things don't happen by accident.
No.
You were definitely placed in the right place. And so you have been doing incredible work. And describe what you mean by soul retrieval.
Sure.
Give us a bit of information on that.
Well, my working and applied definition of the soul is really our life essence. And as I've continued to explore what that is, I understand that, in fact, the soul is composed of really three souls. And it's life essence that has to do with our body, and life essence that has to do with our developing mind, and even life essence that forms in and around the immortal part of our soul. And being that it's life essence, it's there to really sustain us as we are alive and incarnated. When something happens, though, that creates a profound trauma or overwhelm or an extensive disharmony, it's as if a portion of this life essence, by its nature, it's meant to be defined by connection, but a portion of it will separate as an adaptive mechanism in order for us to narrow down and cope in these circumstances which are traumatic and overwhelming and in some cases threatening to our lives. The idea is that it's meant to be short-term temporary, this separation, with the hope that we can step into a rhythm of reharmonizing and recovery once the trauma and the overwhelm is past. But too often, the structure of our life or the focus within the society is such that we do not get to complete that rhythm of reharmonizing.
Mm-hmm.
And an agitation or a fear-based reality will exist that doesn't allow the natural rhythmic return of this part of ourselves that's separated temporarily. And if it can't come back in, inevitably what will happen is it will seek affinity within a whole other level of reality that it's familiar with, oftentimes in order to get what it was that it needed at the time that it left. Now that's quite a generalization, because it isn't always that case. But that's a basic definition of soul loss. And soul retrieval is a healing approach to create the natural reunion, especially after a soul part or portion of the life essence has left and entered into another level of reality, which then really it defines it as being dissociated. Not only is it dissociated and disconnected from you, but it's at a level of reality that doesn't operate like this physical world where we have a sense of the past and the present and the future. It's as if it's one vast present moment. And it's only what is in the present state of the awareness of that level of reality that the soul part orients to. So it doesn't like have a memory of you. It doesn't think in terms of the past. It's whether you're in its awareness or not. And if you're not in its awareness, it's as if it has forgotten about you. So it's disconnected and not aware of you, and thus in a state of suspended dissociation and separation. And people will sometimes feel that something's missing. You know, I haven't been the same since that. And it's even in our language, in the media, in the storytelling, in the lyrics of many of songs. They will, you know, actually mention having lost a part of themselves or something went missing. Now, as it turns out, one of the oldest healing techniques is to actually use a shift in the altered state and awareness on behalf of somebody else, to journey on their behalf and go and connect with that which is missing and bridge it back from that level of reality back to the life that's being lived right now. And when people ask me, well, what is it that you do? I have to ask them, you know, ever have an experience where you felt like you missed a part of your life essence, your soul? And they go, oh, yeah. And I go, did you ever think you could get it back? And they go, really? I never thought of that. So it's bringing it back into the awareness first of people that it's possible. And then drawing on this very, very ancient technique that's based on shamanic journey methods to connect with that part of the person's soul and bridge it back to them. And really what that means is that there's more of them available to them to live their life, especially in the present moment.
Wonderful. And your book, I just want to introduce that, is called Spirit Medicine, Healing in the Sacred Realms.
Yes, I wrote that with my husband, Hank Wesselman. We had been asked by our students for many years to please put down this information in a way that they could revisit it, and people who'd never worked with us could visit it for the first time and make it reader-friendly and user-friendly. And we even have some exercises in the back with a recording, a CD of drumming and rattling, that is designed to help support the exercises. So it's been very helpful to a lot of people.
Well, and Hank has been on our show twice now, and,
yes,
and it's in the archives for people if they want to connect to that information. And it's interesting that you both are doing this together,
yeah,
in your workshops, that you're helping to train people in this information.
Yes, I should say that we have been married very, very long time now, over 25 years. And he being an academic and working in physical anthropology, and I being part of the medical world working in physical therapy, we never really saw an overlap of our careers. Occasionally, we'd have some pretty good conversations about anatomy, but he'd go off to his work, I'd go off to mine. And inevitably, what happened was, through his experiences, as he probably talked about in a prior show of yours, as well as my natural intuitive nature, which I took into any form of work that I worked with, eventually started to cross.
Mm-hmm.
And our conversations and the opportunity to do things together, to teach together, and then to author this book together, it was very organic. And interestingly enough, all of the things that we do are based upon people asking if we'll come and do that or create that. So it's been a different kind of plan. It's not a plan like our educational and professional goals. It's just, when people started asking us to offer this information and share it, we started to say yes, and inevitably it ended up being a collaboration.
It's important, too, to let the audience know how they can contact you or read more about that on your website.
Sure.
I believe that is sharedwisdom.com, is that
it
right?
It is. It's all lowercase and no space between the word shared and wisdom.com. And on the home page, if you scroll down, you'll see my face, you'll see Hank's face, and there's some video interview that's there, and then you can click on my name and read more about my work as well.
Well, and there's so much information that they can get out of the book, Spirit Medicine.
You bet.
If they get that. I read that, and it is super. And it's easy to read. That's,
yes, it is.
I enjoyed that.
You know, short chapters, and it's, I think we did a really good job getting it out there at a level, if it's a first-time visitor to these topics, then you're not having to wade through a lot of esoterica.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it can be overwhelming, especially, you know, there are certain terms like soul cluster,
yeah,
and so forth. However, you do make it very easily understood.
Good.
And Hank has already spoken about the soul cluster a number of times.
Good.
It is a part of the information, obviously. We can briefly touch on that as well, because I want people to have an example of what it is that we're talking about. In other words, we're talking about illnesses that have come about from or even a sense of dissociation, not necessarily illnesses, maybe not yet anyway, but perhaps just a sense of dissociation that's come about from a trauma or a loss of some kind.
Yeah.
And can you give us an example of a client you might have worked with that, you know, kind of, you can go through that information about how you worked with that client?
Yes, because I will get requests from people that often they have spent a great deal of their life fulfilling certain aspects that they set forth for themselves, and then yet there's this avenue that seems very elusive. And in their own mind's eye, they know exactly when something happened in their life that changed them forever.
Mm-hmm.
And a classic example I give is a man who's actually raised and has lived his adult life as a Catholic. And he was very concerned because he was having going forward in his life, now that he reached a certain age and stage of retirement. It wasn't so much the retirement that was blocking him. It's just that everything that he had established on his list of what he wanted to do with his life, he had done. And his inability to go forward, though, had more to do with an incident that he knew happened when he was 8 years old. Hmm. And the story, and I'll do it briefly, and I must say that I never met this man. We contacted each other from a distance. I did the work for him at a distance, and it was very, very successful. When he contacted me, he said, "I know exactly when this sharp turn in my life occurred. It was the first day of third grade. I was excited because that's a rite of passage. The third graders always gather on the first day of school, and we sit in the front pews of the church chapel. It's always a communion ceremony, and afterwards the school has a really neat breakfast potluck, and that's the beginning of the year of school. And so that when you finally get to be a third grader, you get to be at the start of communion. But the rule was that there was to be no breakfast, nothing to drink prior to the communion." And in his excitement of anticipating this event, and being a little, you know, little boy, he hopped and skipped his way to school that day and ended up a little bit breathless, went over to the drinking fountain and took a big long drink only for one of the nuns to come and grab him on the shoulder and say, "Because of that drink, you'll not be taking communion."
Oh, my.
In the end, he had to participate, though, which meant that when it came time for all the third graders to go up and take communion, he had to stay all alone back in the pew. And that was a certain amount of social humiliation that went on. And then complete denial of something that he had opened his heart to and was fully looking forward to. And he said, "I haven't been the same since that day." And he said, "It took me until I was 45 years old until I could talk about it. And then it took until I was about 60 years old until I could talk about it without crying."
Hmm.
And he was at this point about 65. Mm-hmm. And my intuition had me ask him, "Well, when you were sitting in that pew, what were you doing? What were you thinking about?" And he said, "Oh, that's when I was making my life list. What I was going to do in terms of going through school and going to college and what I was going to study and what kind of career I was going to have. And I was going to get married and I wanted to have a family of four children." And he made this list during that time just to take his mind off of what was going on. And interestingly enough then, that list had come to an end at that stage in his life, at 65. Plus, his wife had died.
Mm-hmm.
And now he was a widower. And the reason he knew to contact me was because somebody who had been in one of our programs had come back into his life. They were high school sweethearts. And she was quite eager for them to have a future together. He was too, except he couldn't move forward on it. When she listened to his story, she said, "I think I know what happened to you that day. I would like for you to contact Jill." Well, he told me the exact story. So this is not about me being psychic and becoming an expert on somebody else's experience. I love it when people energize the phenomenon, when they can name and claim what happened to them. It creates this wonderful energetic thread from them, actually all the way to connect with that part of their life essence that's dissociated.
Just telling the story?
Just telling the story, naming and claiming it, or naming, at least saying something about, you know, "I just know I wasn't the same since this,"
mm-hmm.
or "I've been feeling this way from the very beginning," or whatever it might be, if they can lend a little bit of their own consideration. But a lot of people don't know, like this fellow. This fellow was very specific. So when I actually journeyed on his behalf with an agreed-upon time and date, he remained with feelings of receptivity, where he was living in Minnesota and I was in California at the time. And when I journeyed with a team of spirits that support this wonderful process. Each one of them has a job and brings energy and power to the process. And what we're really doing is just stepping from this side of the mirror, if you can think of it that way, into a realm of reality that is more like the dream world or the dream aspect of everything that exists. And even realms that we go to only in our nighttime dreaming, or if in fact we have the capacity to send our conscious awareness in those directions. But I go with a team. It's very powerful to do it with a team of spirits. And inasmuch as he had pointed the way, and I had stated the intention to journey on his behalf for any and all soul parts that we're truly ready to come back and be of service to him at this time, based upon his call, then inevitably we found ourselves in the dream aspect of the school chapel. And it appeared to be empty and filtering light coming in. There was a peacefulness there. And as I and my spirit teams walked down the center aisle, I did notice that there was a little head just showing over the back of the pew in the front row. And as I got closer, I turned and looked, and it was a little boy, and he was as if he was a statue, or made of stone. He was that solid, and no color to his face or his countenance whatsoever. And in that sense, it's almost as if he's contained. So whenever there is not an immediacy of ability to interact, the spirit team and I put the call out, who amongst you, amongst the exalted healing spirits, will come and assist us to bring a certain revived quality to the situation? And the back door on the side of the chapel opened up and this luminescence came in, and there wasn't really anyone or anything that I could see at first, but this energetic field came down the side, and inevitably when it came forward and the quality of the light toned down a bit, we realized we were in the presence of Jesus of Nazareth himself.
Mm.
And he came with such an extraordinary energy, unlike any picture depiction of him whatsoever. He came and greeted us without words, and then turned in the direction of this little boy and leaned over and began to very gently blow into this boy's face. And as he did so, there was a softening and a softening and a softening in the quality of this little presence. And the color came back into the cheeks, his eyes started to blink. And as he became more animated, Jesus turned and went up into the pulpit area. The little boy looked at us, and one of the spirits steps forward and introduces us and says who we are and how it is we're there. At that moment, Jesus turns around and comes down with the offering of communion for the little boy.
Mm-hmm.
And so this little boy, part of his life essence, had stayed behind in that pew. It had dissociated from him and had stayed there in the dream aspect of that chapel all those years,
mm-hmm.
because its commitment was to receive communion
mm-hmm.
as the possibility for his going forward in life and being open to life and not just the plan. And so Jesus officiated in offering him communion.
Wonderful.
And then when he did so, he assisted the little boy down to the end of the pew and back into our care, in which this symbolic boy, this portion of this man's life essence, was then cradled in my expanded heart energy, which has what I consider holding spaces, until I could use my breath to blow it back to this man, knowing that I'm actually using the non-ordinary levels of connection that we have to blow it from me to him. And I'm glad to say that 6 weeks later, I got a wedding announcement
mm-hmm.
from him and his new beloved, my friend. So you see, there's always a chance. There's always the opportunity to correct these things that were so disharmonious, so traumatic, emotionally, mentally, not just physically, but at the heart level.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes, in order for us to cope and just carry on, a portion of us will leave and often will dissociate.
Mm-hmm. And you guide that portion back, and that's
wonderful.
I do. Wonderful.
There's a kind of a protocol that I and my spirits have to make sure that everything is exactly done the way it needs to be done, nothing more, nothing less, all boundaries are honored. Everything is done at a level of readiness,
mm-hmm.
and it's done with an idea that the outcome will be of service to this person.
Have you ever had a time where you were not able to collect that portion and bring it back, or, you know, that it was refusing to come? Or
no, I've never had that, because being that I language it as ready,
mm-hmm.
my intention is for those soul parts that are truly ready to come back,
mm-hmm.
then I will only engage those that are truly ready. That does say that there may be some that don't come back because they're not ready. But it, you know what? It's not the energy of not ready. It's the energy of getting ready.
Mm.
And people will go, oh, my goodness, you know, what do you mean they're not all going to come back? And I'll go, well, figure it this way. Think back to when you were looking forward to going out on a date, and your date arrives early, and you're not quite ready. You want to take some extra time, don't you, to get ready before you go out on your date. So it's that same quality. It's the same, you know, it's going to be the best it can be at that moment of readiness. Now, I will say this, that those that do come back always come back with something to offer the person.
So I was going to ask about what qualities are typical of having been lost and are retrieved. You know, are we talking about self-esteem, confidence, that kind of thing?
Usually they are some form of derivative of not feeling good enough or not feeling lovable or both. And they can occur as a result of somebody else defining the person as such, or coming to some kind of conclusion that that must be the reason why something awful has happened. Well, it must be because I'm not lovable, or it must be because I'm not good enough. It's almost as if they have an existential crisis in that. Mm-hmm. And it's often very silent, unless somebody has said that to them. But, you know, when somebody says that to you, it says more about that person than it does about you.
Yes.
But
yeah.
Most of the time, we don't know that, especially if we're young children.
Yeah.
And as we're growing and trying to define more about who we are, then if we're in fact defined as not lovable or not good enough, that can be a very core loss that then perpetuates a rhythm or a pattern of loss later on in life.
You know, I work with clients, and I do something similar, and I call it the soul restoration.
Yes.
And, you know, sometimes it's important for them to tell, like you say, to tell the story, to really get what the script was that they somehow incorporated into their lives. And it's, you know, it's all a subconscious script.
Right.
And it really is this insight that goes on when you can just tell when a person, you know, when you're dealing in the presence of the person, you can tell when they really get something.
That's right.
How do you know you're doing a remote healing session? How do you really sense, obviously you must be able to sense that something has really clicked in and happened?
At the time I'm journeying, or?
Yeah. Is that what you're, when do you feel that you've done the complete job?
Well, each journey has its own definition of purpose. And inevitably there is a small cluster of soul parts that come back. Interestingly enough, because I'm working at the level, the spirit realm, which is the same as the dream world, a lot of it is very symbolic. Based on imagery, metaphor. And because of the fact that I have a spirit team that has a lot of credit for actually doing the work, that's really their realm. My job is to communicate with the person and to bridge the results from one level back to another. It's really the spirit team, the protocols, things that they've put in place that let me know. And at the very beginning of the journey, there's a moment in which I am escorted into the great mystery void, which at a level of egoic personality is not a great place to experience. So one of them will actually assist the Jill who I think I am and the Jill who I'm afraid I am out of my energetic matrix and allow more of the Jill who I really am to come in. And it's a different lens of perception, such that as I'm in the great mystery void, things begin to show up. And it's when they show up and I see the energetic pattern that connects them that I know we're locked in. And the immortal part of my soul, the Jill who I really am, is resonating with being in this location because its lens of perception, as it reveals itself to, you know, more of the mortal me, is, my gosh, this is the space of all possibilities and full potential. What a great place to begin a soul retrieval.
Do you ever not want to come back from there?
This is a pretty disciplined journey. There are times on my own where I'll go, I'd like to go and hang out there, but you know, I'm in agreement to always take a spirit with me so that I don't leave anything there.
Yes, that's been very important.
Yeah, I think they're great places for us to go in the dream world, like in a daydream kind of fashion. And we can do that often, and with our, you know, conscious awareness and agreement that we come back. Because often I will find portions of people's life essence that they leave in places that are great momentary retreats and getaways in the dream world, but we're really not meant to stay there.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
well, it's interesting because, you know, Hank shared last time with our audience, he shared the sacred journey at Sacred Garden.
Sacred Garden, yes.
And I must say, you know, since I began using that, it is so wonderful, this expansive sense I get when I go there, and
yes,
freeing and just loving the energy.
Yeah.
It really is where I, you know, I hope I do go there when I pass to the next dimension.
Absolutely. It's definitely at the same level that we go into when we pass, and why not accept being a co-creator and co-create this environment, our own Bardo realm? And there are times when people will receive their soul parts back, and if they've worked with us or they know about the Sacred Garden, they'll actually look to put the soul part in their Sacred Garden.
Ah.
And go to their garden and meet with the soul part and enter into conversation for their own personal discovery. In fact, being that I do this work in a symbolic realm, it means that I don't violate a certain line, which is because this work is so personal for the individual. In some ways, it's nobody else's business but theirs.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they can tell their stories, they can discuss about how their life is or is not working, they can talk about what patterns in their lives don't serve them, times when they sense or know that they've had soul loss. But the minute the journey goes into motion, things are happening that are much more at an energetic, symbolic realm in which I can speak about the contextual information, but I cannot assign meaning.
Mm-hmm.
So even after the soul retrieval, I have people discover ways that work for them to welcome their soul parts back, because in doing so, it affords a deepening and an integration, and insights bubble up. Discoveries start to happen, whether it's their inner reality or their outer reality that changes. They'll bring a soul part into their garden. They'll watch how their garden responds to the soul part. It provides even more discovery. Because with that kind of discovery, as you embrace the path of discovery for yourself, you get to claim the power of every discovery. I don't do this work clairvoyantly, in other words. I don't become
the
expert.
Yeah, I was going to ask, do you have to even know the story? Do they have to give you their story? Or
no, I don't. I don't. And yet, there is a role for people to play in energizing the process. And so I don't have to know their story, and yet it's encouraged, because I notice that even in complementary or alternative healing practices, people still want to come to somebody else and have them fix them.
Mm-hmm.
And my spirits are very much saying, hey, nobody really fixes or heals anybody else.
Mm.
We need to get people to put something into the mix as to how it is that they're asking for this healing. Just
yeah,
answer
take
that question.
Responsibility is important.
Mm. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or else it can become much more of a passive experience, which is not going to make very much change. There's always a portion of this work where you have to be at least interested in allowing your power to come up and to get back on track. And I've had people who've just wanted to be very passive about the whole thing, and I will then say, well, how are you going to live your life differently once you get this soul part back?
Mm,
and they don't have
question.
A clue.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll say, how about certain life skills? You may, in fact, find that you do need to step into therapy or maybe even body work. Something needs to change to support the fact that there's more life essence back. How do you feel about having more of you available to you?
Great question.
Yeah. And so, being that I'm a physical therapist, you see,
mm-hmm.
it's really about getting back on your feet, becoming more independent, becoming more functional so that your life is not only, shall we say, safer and you're surviving better, but you're actually more open to thrive. Mm-hmm. So I'll even ask that question too. I'll say, what does thriving look like to you? And having the soul part back, how are you going to step into being somebody who's going to engage thriving as well as surviving? So it, you know, this is what I mean by readiness.
Mm-hmm.
And if people are saying, I am ready to do this soul retrieval, then I'll say, good, because you're the one who's going to benefit from your readiness.
People, you have been listening to Jill Kirkendale, and I am so glad she's with us speaking about soul retrieval. And her website is sharedwisdom.com. And you have been listening to Carrie Elf's Heartlink show. And we're going to discuss more about the will to live and what are some of the reasons people do get ill that may be important for them to recognize and do something about. Jill, do you ever work with people who don't have the will to live?
Well, I certainly did in the hospital. You know, we have a medical codes for physiologically based medical conditions, and there is something called failure to thrive, which shows up for the very youngest members of our population, for infants, as well as our elders. And I used to think, what about the rest of us? Because I would find a lot of people who were really at that stage of not showing, you know, much will to live, or being so frightened, not really having those will forces to risk getting out of bed, risk sitting up for 15 minutes. And so it was a matter of not coming in and insisting that they do anything in which they were not in agreement. But oftentimes it was about, are you willing to explore this possibility? That's a big question. And if they're not, believe it or not, then it's my personal responsibility to respect their wishes, and I let them know that. So the feeling of not having the will to live is really a beginning of a conversation to find out more, what does that mean? What does that mean to this person? Because, boy, it can mean so many different things. And then is there at least a willingness to explore the possibilities? And I have had people who were not willing to get out of bed in the hospital. And I said, well, in order for you to be much more in control of your existence here, are you willing to learn how to roll in bed from side to side? Or are you at least willing to learn how to come and sit on the side of the bed? These are all things that you can do based upon your own choice, even if you don't want to get out of bed. It begins to open up the world of possibilities that maybe they don't know about.
Wonderful.
And so I it's not that I take no for granted. In fact, I always had a funny little thing in the hospital where people had to refuse me 3 times for me to officially chart that somebody has refused treatment.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of like playing my own little fairy tale. You know, 3 wishes, 3 refusals, that kind of thing. But before I would walk away, I'd say, before, you know, I respect your wishes, and before I make note of them, let's do talk a little bit more about this. And there's no coercion. I think we need to get away from the sense of coercion. It's so anchored in the negative polarity.
Mm-hmm.
But we can become good communicators of persuasion and still respect the person that we're working for.
Mm-hmm.
So we can persuade them by helping them explore the possibilities and then respect their choices all along the way, and give them plenty of chances to choose differently.
And sometimes it's just pretending that you have the will to live.
Yes. In fact, somebody said to me, oh, I'm too anxious. I'm too anxious to get out of bed. And I go, well, you know what anxiety is? And they look confused. And they go, what is it? And they go, well, it's excitement without enough oxygen. Sometimes it is.
Mm-hmm.
So we used to just sit and deep breathe until they got a lot of good oxygen in them. And amazingly, they'd go, hey, you know what? I think I can get out of bed.
Well,
yeah.
You know, and it's I guess you share with the client after you've done your journeying into those realms.
Yes.
And I guess that's the insight time for them on some level. And is there ever a time when you don't have anything to share with them? Or you have problems with what to tell them? Or
no, there's inevitably some things to tell them. The only time I had very little to tell somebody was when I first started working and I wasn't quite sure how to work the time parameter of somebody telling their story. And I had somebody who told her story for over an hour. And I thought, oh my God, I'll probably be journeying for over an hour.
Oh, that's funny.
And I was just shocked. You know, I thought, this is going to take a long time. And finally, she just got to where she said, I don't think I can say anymore. And I said, okay. And when I journeyed, it was a very short journey. And when I actually made it into the dream world, it was almost like a cartoon. But, you know, I respected it. It's as if this big hand came out of a cloud with a gunny sack filled with something. And they said, her soul parts are in here. Just give them back to her. We're not going to show you anything more because she can't handle any more story in her life. It was a very short journey, and I felt very self-conscious about telling her that. But she was so relieved. She was so relieved. So that was the time where there wasn't much to share. But in fact, there were other things to share that happened in some of the preliminary work that I did on her behalf before we even met. There were spirit helpers that wanted to come into relationship with her and stay connected to her to support the increase in her personal power and help guide her into how to use it and how to integrate some of the great gifts and medicine that they had to offer so it was a part of her own personal power. There were other things to share.
Mm-hmm.
But the actual journey experience was pretty much summed up in about a minute. And she taught me a lot by how relieved she was, and I could see that it freed her from some of the burden of her story.
Mm-hmm.
But I've never had an experience where there wasn't really anything else to say.
Well, you know, just telling their stories can be so, like you say, so healing, and sometimes they change their story after having told it so many times.
Yes, and, you know, I know this may sound a little funny, but I take some notes while they're telling their story, and I tell them I'm doing that because, in fact, my spirits begin to shift the energy while a person's telling the story.
Mm.
And it's not even a time for me to try and remember everything, but I write down a few notes of what they're saying. Because when I finally shift into doing the journey, I'm not operating with the memory of their story. Their story is there to energize the process.
Mm-hmm.
And after the end of the session, when I bid the person farewell, I go back into a consultative moment with my spirits. They bring me into kind of like a debriefing. It's not about more information from the journey, but how that particular journey shows me how this work works. And if there's anything about that person's healing path that mirrors or parallels mine, they let me know about that too. There's no getting away from it.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they bring me fully out of trance, I don't have a lot of recall as to what was discussed and even some of the content of the journey. So I have ways of keeping records on all of that without me going around and thinking about it or having it come into my own dreaming at night or my own processing or, you know, even in leading into a conversation or something. I would have to go back to my paperwork and some of the imagery that I've created as a result of the journey. And in that way, it really helps to, it builds in this confidentiality while at the same time keeping a record of what was experienced. And I'll say I've done over 4,000 of these.
Oh.
My files are getting full.
Do you see a similar pattern, a theme that is running through most of the population these days?
Yes, and I have to say that I've only really worked with Western psychological people, you know, Americans and Europeans and so forth. There are certain themes. A lot of it does have to do, even at the time of our birth, of not being completely welcomed at the time that we're born.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, those themes of not being good enough, not being lovable, somehow that occurring in very early childhood, where we don't have a worldly mind to fully understand. It says more about the person or the people around us than it does about us.
Mm-hmm.
I'm oftentimes amazed at soul loss occurs during childhood because there are stages by which we're meant to claim our power and levels of independence, and those opportunities don't occur or we don't do it, and a part of us will leave, which will keep us back into more of a childhood style of being in the world.
Mm-hmm. More well, the first 6 years, they say, is the most important.
Oh, and imagine all the changes we do. I mean, we go from being a completely dependent little being to, at 6 years old, there's language and socializing going on, and we're developing a mind. And, I mean, that's a lot of change in 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
So well, we're at that stage.
And even in utero, Bruce Lipton was saying how often, you know, just the mother's chemistry can program us.
And I have worked with people who had soul loss in utero.
Mm-hmm.
There's also sensitivity that can go on. And yet what I also will let people know, because they'll say, well, now I've done soul retrieval, I'll never have soul loss again. And I go, that's not true. Remember, it's an adaptive mechanism. It's now that you know. Mm-hmm. Be aware of when the soul loss has occurred and make an effort within a few days to call that soul part back. Don't settle for it being dissociated. Make choices to begin to reharmonize your life, whether, you know, it's simple choices or ones where you're now going to make decisions and it's going to take time. But still, you're making these choices to reharmonize your life and call that soul part back. And even people who've been in surgery, it's the anesthesia that will do the great trauma to the nervous system. And so I've said to folks, call upon a helping spirit who, if you have any aspect of your life essence that leaves during surgery, have it go right to that helping spirit, such that while you're in recovery and in the following days, you accept your soul part back. You do not have to settle for it being dissociated.
So we can continue to go back until we do get connected again. Is that right?
That's
right. And there's no end to how many times we can. Should it be spaced out in terms of a session? Or how,
well, it's interesting. My spirits are very, very optimistic about what we humans can do. And there's also a part of our life experience in which, yeah, we're meant to struggle a little bit. So the way in which the protocols are, in the ways in which I work, is that call for that healing creates an energetic reconnection out into these dissociated spirit realms and connects with the soul parts that are missing. And then as I state the intention for those to come back, some of those threads start vibrating, and then it's a tracking exercise.
Ah.
Those that are not vibrating are not ready to come back, but now they're partially connected to the person. Mm-hmm. And as they do other work, personal growth, therapy, and live their life, shifting their attitude, making new decisions, maturing, whatever it might be, then it actually, their life essence becomes something that is connected to those soul parts and contributes to the further readying. And when those soul parts reach a point of readiness to come back, they've also been given an opportunity to begin to remember the individual because they're connected to him or her.
Hmm.
So there's things that can happen automatically now. But people do have to accept the fact that they're here to care and nurture for their own soul. And when those soul parts are ready to come back and you have the connection to them, then call upon whomever, your guardian angel, a saint or sage, a spirit helper, your spirit of your grandmother, to go and get it and bring it back to you. And see if, in fact, that's possible. There are times when soul parts are in realms that we would be considered too challenging to engage ourselves. And it is very important that we ask for somebody who does this work in a way that is safe for everyone involved to go and engage those realms to bring the soul part back. So there's the opportunity to take on more of your own responsibility as time goes by, and then to also know when is it appropriate to ask for another person. When somebody comes to me for soul retrieval, I will say, I'll be glad to be of service to you again, but please give it at least 4 to 6 months, because you need time to integrate this and then start to live it at this new level. Your personal power is going to start to come up. It's going to take some getting used to. You may want to go into some verbal therapy or another form of personal growth for a while that you find very helpful. But if after 4 to 6 months something specific comes to mind, contact me, and then we'll see what that's about. And each time I do it, there seems to be more and more of an involvement for the person so that they get more comfortable turning in the direction on their own behalf and allowing for spirit helpers to assist them in welcoming a soul part back as soon as it is ready.
Have you ever done a group soul retrieval session?
I have. I've done it with students of ours where they have experienced our Vision Seeker 1 and then our Vision Seeker 2, which is our spirit medicine training, and had the opportunity in which to ask for the group to experience a soul retrieval as a group experience. Now, we know that it can happen to on a larger scale. I think what happened on 9/11 is an example of soul loss at the national level.
Yeah.
And there is important work to be done for other groups in which there has been soul loss. Yet it is based on readiness and a people's willingness to be receptive for whatever it is that they're getting back that day. So it would have to be in full agreement and readiness for each group.
Mm-hmm. Well, this opens up so much in terms of the group consciousness.
Absolutely.
And really how so much of our current creation is dependent on the group consciousness.
Yes, it is. And actually also asking people to do their own work. I love these beautiful techniques we have, including yoga and Tai Chi that have become somewhat more mainstream. And knowing that we can all participate at a level of doing our own work means that when we do come together, then there's a level of readiness at the group level then that's even, exponentially available to us.
Oh, I absolutely agree. In fact, I might just insert at this point, just to encourage people during these times that we're undergoing such change in our financial situation right now. It's amazing the challenges that people are faced with right now.
Yes, it is.
And that we can change the whole dynamics of this energy that we've been stuck in for millennia, actually.
Yes.
That we literally get to co-create a whole new vibration, a whole new energy.
Yes, indeed.
So I'm going to encourage people to intend that they release from this discomfort and that this old belief system and their old the relationship with money and the monetary and banking system and any old belief systems about they're not fitting in with the system or whatever they're telling themselves, old limiting beliefs of confusion about it, and the sense that they're being forced to live with it and that kind of thing. Any old belief systems that they may have about financial shame or financial death, I ask that they intend that they change and shift and release all their anger and frustration and rage around that, and that they let it go from the conscious and subconscious and cellular memory.
Absolutely.
And bring in and replace it with a whole new energetic, a new sense of belief that the new energy is going to allow us to be free and feel a sense of freedom in our interacting with money.
Good.
And with interacting with our monetary system. So
yes.
We are in charge. We really do get to control that. So
that's right.
Well, and it's been such an incredible, wonderful program today with you, Jill Kirkendall. Is that right?
That's correct.
I struggled with that, and I said, I'm going to say it right.
You got it.
Jill Kirkendall, we are so pleased that you've been on our show and love to have you back. And just this information for people where they literally they have adapted through perhaps soul loss, for a reason, but that is, they don't have to be stuck with it forever.
Not at all. Not at all. In fact, begin to be good to yourself. Drop in from your head down into your heart and make more room, you know, for the love that's meant to be there. And you'll become a beacon. You'll be surprised. There may be some that actually are not so dissociated. They're just waiting for you to be ready so that they can come back in.
Wonderful.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you so much. And Jill's website is sharedwisdom.com. Her book is Spirit Medicine. And I encourage you to go out and get that today. And I'm so glad we've been able to connect and broaden our horizons towards more freedom, light, and love today.
Absolutely.
And thank you. I want to thank BBS Radio for allowing the show and for us to expand our consciousness. And do check my website, heartlinkinstitute.com. Thank you, everyone. Bye-bye.